This will come to order at 3:10 PM on May 2nd. I apologize for being in another committee, but we've got a quorum. We've got Representative Mark Newman, Representative Bob Booth, Representative Berta Gardner, and myself, Chair Kurt Olson. We've got two bills up today. The first bill on today's agenda is House Bill 172, and it will be presented by Ms. Eleanor Wolf of my office. Good afternoon, Ms. Wolf.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman.
Please state your name and affiliation for the record.
Home address, telephone number.
Why are you interested?
For the record, my name's Eleanor Wolf, and I'm staff to the Chair, Representative Kurt Olson. 172. House Bill 172 will exempt commercial refuse service, the collection disposal of refuse materials using dumpsters and wheel containers with a capacity of one cubic yard or more from rate regulation by the Regulatory Commission. Removing rate regulation from commercial refuse service will allow flexibility in setting rates which will promote innovation as to rates and services and will reduce costs for commercial customers. Flexibility in setting rates should also assist commercial refuse utilities and commercial customers in developing integrated waste stream recycling, diversion, and disposal systems. Removing rate regulation should reduce the cost and administrative burden associated with the generation, review, and maintenance of tariffs. This, in turn, should encourage more entrance into the commercial refuse market, benefiting commercial customers overall. Removal of commercial refuse rate regulation will promote the public good by allowing the RCA to utilize the resources now devoted to commercial rate regulation to more pressing consumer issues. Rate deregulation will not prevent the RCA from continuing to police the commercial refuse market. The RCA will retain the right to modify, suspend, or revoke a commercial refuse utility certificate of public convenience and necessity for good cause shown. The Commission will also retain jurisdiction to address and resolve customer disputes and claims that a particular company is acting improperly. Alaska has a vibrant, knowledgeable commercial community capable of evaluating the services and rates offered by commercial refuse utilities. Rate deregulation will allow market forces to set rates and drive service innovation. The Labor and Commerce Committee has introduced this bill at the request of the commercial refuse haulers.
I'd like the record to reflect we've been joined by Representative Gabrielle Ledoux. And are there any questions for Ms. Wolf?
Thank you, Ms. Wolf, for your presentation. Are there any communities in Alaska where if we deregulate refuse collection, there will be no competition or no sort of external control on the pricing monopoly situation?
Through the Chair, Representative Gardner, as I understand it, if there is an area where there's no competition, the deregulation doesn't apply to them.
Oh.
It does require competition to set rates for them to be deregulated.
Okay, thank you very much. And Mr. Chair, I have a couple of questions, but really would like to make them for the people who wrote some of the letters of support. Can you tell me if Alaskans for Litter Prevention and Recycling are signed up to testify, or the Alaska Center for the Environment?
We've got two people from the RCA for questions only, and Alaska Waste Haulers, William Snell. So we don't have anybody else.
Okay, well, maybe I'll throw these questions out there and see if there's somebody who's interested or able to answer them. The letter from Alaskans for Litter Prevention and Recycling says that they think that deregulation of commercial rates will allow providers to create differential pricing on disposal to encourage and promote recycling. Very interesting idea, but I don't really see the connection between whether the RCA controls the rates or not and how much recycling is done.
I think the RCA, Mr. Chairman, could probably answer that question.
Mr. Chair.
Rich Gasaway, are you with us? Rich Gasaway, RCA, are you with us?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Could you rephrase?
Rephrase the question?
Yeah.
Hi, Mr. Gasaway. We have a letter before us from the Alaskans for Litter Prevention and Recycling, and they're supporting this bill. And one of their reasons is, and I quote, The deregulation of commercial rates will allow providers to create differential pricing on disposal to encourage and promote recycling, which benefits the recycling industry, et cetera, et cetera. And I just am curious about how they see deregulation as encouraging and promoting recycling. I just don't myself see a connection there. Are you there?
Excuse me, I think I was muted. Let me start again. And I'm not sure how they make that leap except for the fact that they wouldn't be bound to, there would be some rate limitations that exist now that they would be exempt from. But I think already they have the power to do a tiered rate structure of some regard to address recycling under AS 4205-431G, which provides that in the establishment of rates under this chapter, the Commission shall promote cost-effective solid waste recovery and recycling services.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Ms. Representative Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If I may make a comment on that, and I think just through pure competition, first off, but with the letter from Alaska Center for the Environment, and on their last couple sentences in there, I think they kind of hit the nail on the head, is with the integrated waste and recycling program will require flexibility and creativity and ability to structure incentives in the community. And I think that that is pretty much stated through competition. And I, when I seen this and I thought about it, that's how I put it together. And if we look at communities that have different recycling programs, you know, they have different for glass, plastics, clears, papers, newspapers. And I think if you have just one company that has control of that, if it's a regulated company, where is the advantage that that company would have to try and expand what they've got if they have to spend more money to differentiate those different types of recyclable products? And so I think that that incentive would come from that. Just my comment or thoughts on the issue.
Mr. Chair, in response to that, I'm not disagreeing. I'm just a little puzzled because is Juno currently regulated in their rates, and they have a wonderful recycling facility. I just still don't see that regulation impedes or promotes either. So anyway, it was a question that's not directly related to the bill. I was just curious about those letters of support.
I'd like the record to reflect we've been joined by Representative Gatto, and I know why he was late. Welcome. Representative Newman?
New question, Mr. Chair. And I don't know if this should be from the fellow for the RCA or probably Ms. Wolf can probably talk about it. Is just, I'm looking at the fiscal note, and I guess I'm looking at, could you kind of just explain that a little bit?
You have to see the fiscal note, sir. Well, it's a change, through the chair, Representative Newman, it's a change in revenue and a change in expenses because all of the revenue of the RCA comes through rate regulation charges. So this would be a reduction to basically the customer's bills. They wouldn't have to pay the regulation fees, therefore they wouldn't be taking in that amount of money.
In other words, the RCA wouldn't get the money because they're not charging the rate regulation fees.
Correct.
That the customers pay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
You're welcome.
I think also online we have William Snell. Are you with us, William?
Yes, sir, I am, Mr. Chairman.
Please state your name and affiliation for the record, and welcome to Labor and Commerce.
Thank you, sir. My name is William R. Snell. I'm a member of the Management Committee of Alaska Waste.
Please proceed.
Mr. Chairman, Alaska Waste is supportive of this legislation. Our reasons for doing it are that we believe this legislation will make our markets more efficient while still ensuring that the regulatory environment provides for public visibility and protection against any type of discriminatory actions on pricing while eliminating significant regulatory burden. We also believe that this legislation allows the industry greater flexibility in meeting our customers' demand and being able to bundle services and be innovative in a more timely fashion to meet the customer's requirements. So I would be glad to respond to any questions, Mr. Chairman, or go into greater detail as to why we think the reasons are good for supporting this legislation.
Well, seeing no questions, I'd like to thank you for taking the time and joining us. Is there anybody else online that would care to testify on this bill? Well, with that, I'll bring it back into the room, and I see nobody signed up. Is there anybody in the room that would care to testify on this bill? With that, we'll close the public testimony and bring it back to the committee. Representative Gardner.
Thank you. I just want to clarify my own understanding here that this deregulation would apply only when there's more than one refuse service in the community.
Through the chair, Representative Gardner, that's my understanding.
Is that correct?
That's mine.
Okay, thank you. Can you show me in the bill?
Well, what are the wishes of the committee? Representative Newman.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill number 172.
Rita?
I'm going to object because I still have a question. I'd just like to see in the bill where it says that they're exempt only if there's more than one in the community.
Through the chair, Representative Gardner, I don't believe it states that specifically in the bill. I think that's RCA regulation. You could check with Mr. Gazaway.
Richard, you still with us?
Yes, sir.
Could you address that question, please?
That's not my understanding. We don't have regulations that would limit the application of a statute to a situation where there was competition.
Thank you. So if this bill were to pass in its present form, it would mean that even in a community where there is only one waste management service, they would be deregulated and there'd be no competition.
For commercial refuse service, that's my understanding, yes.
Thank you very much.
Any further questions?
Mr. Chair, would you consider an amendment that would make this apply only when there's more than one business in operation?
Mr. Chairman, I think you might want to check with the RCA and see if that's even possible for you to attempt to write an amendment.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Chair, may I speak to that?
Sure. Representative Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to speak to that, and the fact that there's only one person certainly doesn't have to be regulated, I would think. But I think that the deregulation is to help promote competition in the marketplace, and so maybe we will have more than one. And if we write into there that it only deals with just one, I think you're just muddying up the waters a little bit.
Rich, you going to bail us out on this?
I'd point to, give me 1 second here, AS 4205-711 has a subsection that exempts utilities making under refuse utilities that gross annually under $300,000. A subsection I says a utility that furnishes collection and disposal service of garbage, refuse, trash, or other waste material and has annual gross revenues of $300,000 or less is exempt from the provisions of this chapter other than the certification provisions at 4205-221-281. So I guess what I'm saying is that the smaller competitors would already be exempt under that provision.
Thank you kindly. Representative Gardner, does that satisfy your question?
I guess.
My gut feeling is if you had more than 300,000, you'd probably have more than one person doing it anyway.
Okay.
Representative Gatto.
Thank you. I'm a little curious. It talks about commercial customers, and not all persons using capacities over a cubic foot need to be commercial customers. There are individuals who are simply remodeling their home, who I guess would that be considered a commercial customer then if you brought a dumpster out to their residence and just let them use it for a month and then picked it up once or twice? Would that be a commercial customer, or would it have, is it defined that way?
I would refer that question to Mr. Gasway, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Gasway.
I heard the question, Mr. Chairman. Representative Gasway, through the chair, I believe I'd have to check their tariffs, but typically what they'll do is they'll have a two-tier rate structure and the size of the receptacle is a distinguishing factor in many instances regarding whether it's commercial or residential service. So with regard to the instance Representative Gatto spoke to, I'm not 100% sure. I assume that it would fall under the commercial service based on the size of the trash container.
Paul?
So just to continue, because there's probably such a low level of requests from individuals, would there be an opportunity then for a commercial service to charge an exorbitant rate, knowing that there really isn't any opportunity to find any competition in this low level of usage?
Representative Gatto, through the chair, one of the aspects of the deregulation proposal is that they would be exempt from the requirement that they not discriminate in rates or service. So, I mean, that's one of the classic regulatory protections through rate regulation is to ensure that all similarly situated customers are treated equally. And I don't know what the intent is, but that statutory provision would no longer apply under the deregulation bill.
That's what I was afraid of, yeah.
Thanks again, Rich.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Gardner.
Mr. Gasway, did I just hear you say that under the proposal they'd be exempt from requirements that they not discriminate?
That's what he said.
Correct.
Is that right?
That's
thank
what
you.
He said, yeah. So that allows it. I'm sorry, Mr. Chair.
Representative Gatto.
Just to rephrase that, they're allowed to discriminate. Am I correct?
To the chair, already discrimination is allowed, so to per se, but it's unreasonable discrimination that is prohibited by statute. And typically what that equates to is that they're allowed to distinguish between customer classes as long as they treat everyone within a customer class alike. What this bill does is it exempts them from all provisions other than 221 through 281, which would include 391, discrimination in rates, and I believe there's another section in discrimination in service that I don't have this. Oh, 301, which is discrimination in service. Does that respond to your question?
I believe it responds to Representative Gatto's, but Representative Ledoux has one now.
What kind of things would they be discriminating on? I mean, I presumably it wouldn't be on race, religion, or one of those other suspect categories with respect to collecting of refuge. What sorts of things would you even be arguing about?
Representative Ledoux, through the chair, one of the circumstances that probably they would find desirable is that when they're securing contracts with larger commercial customers, they wouldn't have to make a rate available to all commercial customers the same rate. They could negotiate a deal and not go through, for example, if they were to do it now, they would have to file a special contract with this commission, which we would review, which would delay the effective date, and we would there's a provision that allows us to have a right to hold up the contract. They wouldn't have to adhere to that situation. And then they wouldn't have to offer the terms of that contract to any other similarly situated customer.
So that wouldn't be unlike other goods and services that are negotiated?
Right. Typically when we receive a special contract, we review it through a tariff process. And as part of that process, we review it for various concerns. And a standard clause that we have imposed in those situations is that they have to offer the terms of the contract to all similarly situated customers.
Thank you.
Representative Newman.
And in regards with like the dumpster question that was asked, if you had a residential service and it was at a resident, wouldn't they just
offer you the residential rates, and the basic residential rates for residential services, even though you got commercial contractors there.
Mr. Gazaway, would you expect that rates would go down as a result of this, House Bill 172, generally?
There's no way for me to speculate on that, Mr. Chair.
Representative Booth, you've been quiet today.
I have been. Thank you. Appreciate the opportunity. Could you tell us the loss of revenue that you're going to suffer on this? Is this going to be anything significant to the RCA?
Representative Booth, to the chair, right now, the way it appears that if we were to base it on our previous year's collections, we would lose essentially $205,000 towards our overall operating budget, and that would carry forward. So one segment of our regulated industry, the commercial refuse providers, would no longer be under our exemption and would pay the actual cost of services rendered to them, as opposed to paying an annual RCC charge, which is passed through to customers, as was noted earlier.
But there would be expenses that would be offset by not having them also.
There could be an argument made that we would have a reverse workload for with regard to review of their tariffs, for example.
Do you think that those would, through the chair, do you think that that would offset? What I'm asking you is the difference between what you're expending on your efforts to oversee this operation versus what it is that you receive for those services. Are they commensurate?
Representative Booth, I personally couldn't answer that question, but we could probably gather some information that may respond to that question, and the reason is this. Staff members allocate their time based on industry, and that is kept in a spreadsheet that determines the ultimate charge that they are assessed through the RCCs. In other words, if you have two industries and one takes up 75% of your time, that industry contributes 75% of your RCC charge for your total cap. So typically that's how it's carried through, and so it's apportioned somewhat on workload, but I can't verify it that the 205 we received in the previous year, how it would allocate going forward.
Rich, Representative Newman has a question for you on
yes.
that issue.
Rich, you're a state agency. Aren't you required to be revenue neutral? I mean, the state's not in the business to make money.
Correct.
So with that assumption, if you would take this loss, I would assume that that's what you expect to cost you to regulate this. Because if that's the charges, or else you've been overcharging or undercharging somebody, if you're required to be revenue neutral, I would assume that if you have a $205 million or $205,000 loss, that's what it costs you to run this program. Is that a correct assumption?
Yes. What I would say is that the RCC amount is we base that allocation on a historical factor. So going forward, if you were to assume that the previous year's expense is equivalent to the next year's expenditure of time in that industry, in other words, that your time spent per industry per year doesn't fluctuate, I would assume that would be a correct statement. In other words, from year to year, there's a difference in the amount of time we spend on refuse issues. 2005 to 2007, for example.
But
we are revenue neutral, and your supposition is correct based on that qualification.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess Rich just answered the question of that last sentence that I asked is, if you're required to be revenue neutral, then you would see no loss for the time that you're not spending on it.
Any further committee discussion? What are the wishes of the committee?
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 172, version 25, LS0690/A from committee with any fiscal note or amendments.
Any opposition?
Mr. Chair, I'm not going to object or vote against moving it out, but I just feel like I don't understand what this really means to consumers. So I don't know what I'm going to do in the end
on this bill. You know, I'll investigate it further. I wish we'd had other people testifying who could kind of definitively tell us something about what it does for consumers, commercial as well as home individuals.
This meeting was noticed in the regular format, not under 24 hours.
And I find the range of supporters to be really interesting.
Truly unique, I think, Mike.
Right. So that, you know, it is a factor, so I'm not going to object to moving it, but I don't know if I'll support it yet.
Well, having been through the next committee of referral on this, I think it will get adequate attention. Anyway, seeing no opposition, I think we'll move it out of committee onto judiciary, and we'll take a brief at ease.
Crap.
We're back on the record, and the next bill is Senate Bill 84. It will be presented by somebody with my favorite name, Senator Olson. Do you care to join us?
Are you guys related?
We're trying to do an Olson-Thomas bill in both bodies. Please state your name and affiliation for the record, Senator.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman and distinguished members of the committee. My name is Donald Olson. I'm the senator from District T up in Nome, which is the Northwest Alaska area. And one thing I will say about this Senate Bill 84 is that, having worked out in rural Alaska and realizing how devastating fires can be, and in my practice as a medical doctor out there, when I saw this little boy, Darren Olana, come on across with burned feet and smoke rings around his mouth, and I looked down into his airway and saw the smoke that he'd been inhaling caused by a fire that he'd been involved with, it made me very passionate and very emotionally charged when you start dealing with fires. And obviously with a fire such as this, and the ability to go ahead and try and do everything you can to stop the stuff, especially where you don't have a fire department in a small village. This is where my area and where I really feel strongly about this. With your permission, Chairman Olson, now what I'd like to do is go ahead and call up Denise Liccioli, who's my senior staff person, to go ahead and present the details of the bill and to answer questions, since she's much more familiar with what's going on. With your permission, I'd like to call her up.
Oh, certainly.
I'm going to leave. I'm a yes vote.
I think everybody is. Welcome to Labor and Commerce, Denise. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Denise Liccioli, and I'm staff to Senator Olson. And I'd like to present Senate Bill 84 to you today. This important piece of legislation mandates that only self-extinguishing cigarettes can be sold in Alaska, and also establishes the testing and certification requirements to assure that only self-extinguishing cigarettes can be sold. Although no cigarette could ever be called safe, so-called self-extinguishing or fire-safe cigarettes are reduced ignition propensity cigarettes. And with that, I'd like to call your attention. Each of you in your packet should have a picture of a cigarette that is produced under this. And you can see in that picture that there are two bands that are called speed bumps, and the what happens is when the cigarette is not actively being smoked, those bumps cause it to go out, and that's why they're called self-extinguishing cigarettes. These cigarettes are designed to be less likely than a conventional cigarette to ignite soft furnishings such as a couch or a mattress. And the bill also provides for marking of cigarette packaging in an approved and easily identifiable manner to indicate that they are fire safe. I would also add to that that the marking would not be the caution that you now get with for cancer, but it would be more like a very dark bar across the the UPC code. One of the examples of how they do it. It would be something that would be easily identifiable, not language. Cigarettes are the leading cause of home fire fatalities in Alaska and the United States, and the most common material that's first ignited in home fires are mattresses and bedding, upholstered furniture, and floor coverings. A typical scenario for fires is when a cigarette is lit and forgotten or dropped by the smoker, and the cigarette can smolder for hours before it flares up into a full blaze. recently, within the last month, I would add that there was a fire such as that that occurred here in Juneau, and you have a newspaper clipping in your packet as well that was lit by such a cigarette that had been left unattended and then blew into, I think it was a couch in that particular case that started the fire that we all saw here in Juneau. 1/4 of all victims of smoking material fire fatalities are not the smoker whose cigarette started the fire, and over 1/3 of those victims are children. The risk of dying in a residential structure fire caused by smoking rises with age. 38% of fatal smoking fire-related victims are age 65 or older. The most common technology used by cigarette manufacturers for reduced cigarette ignition propensity, or RCIP cigarettes, is to make the paper thicker in places to slow down the burn. If such a cigarette is left unattended, when the burn reaches one of the thicker places or speed bumps, it self-extinguishes. Self-extinguishing cigarettes meet established fire safety performance standards. Legislation similar to Senate Bill 84 has been enacted in 9 states. That includes New York, which was the first state, Massachusetts, Vermont, New Hampshire, California, Illinois, and recently also Utah, Kentucky, and Oregon. A fire-safe cigarette mandate has also been approved for all of Canada. This legislation is supported by the Alaska Fire Chiefs, the Alaska Firefighters Association, and the Department of Public Safety Division of Fire Prevention. Senate Bill 84 is an important piece of legislation that will save lives as well as reduce injuries and damage to property in Alaska. So with that, I would be happy to try and answer any questions the committee might have.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Couple of questions. I'm assuming that these would be readily available from the market. The industry is already producing these.
Through the chair, Representative Newman, that's correct. They are being produced in those 9 states, all of Canada, and probably other places as well.
So if a person had the old, if this bill passes, becomes law, and you had cigarettes in stock that were not this type of cigarette, could you still sell your stock? I mean, would a small store owner have to swallow the cost of those other cigarettes, just throw them out the door?
Through the chair, Representative Newman, there is a section in the bill that allows them to take a period of time to convert to the new ones. So they wouldn't. The period of time is designed so that they should be able to sell that stock, and then when they reorder to get the new.
And if I may, Mr. Chair, this would be the only kind of cigarette that would be available for sale in Alaska.
Through the chair, that's correct.
What would the price difference? I don't even know what a pack of cigarettes costs, so I have no idea.
Through the chair, Representative Newman, as I understand it, the price of the cigarettes would not increase, and it hasn't in any of the other states where this has passed. The tobacco industry did testify in other hearings that the price difference for them to produce such a cigarette is negligible, so the price doesn't change to the consumer or the dealer.
And I guess one more question would be for Dr. Olson.
Sure.
When I say doctor, it's more of a medical question, I think, in my mind is, with the paper being thicker, is that more hazardous than the in your opinion, than the tobacco would be? I guess you're smoking a tree instead of a leaf. But the paper has the chemicals and stuff that are incorporated into to bleach it and stuff. I guess that would be a medical concern that way.
From what I've heard in the journals, Representative Newman, through the chair, is that there is no increase in exposure to anything, that any chemicals that are either in the paper or the tobacco that are going to adversely affect or change any of the particulates that might be going into the smoker's body. And so I realize that the journal may not be complete, but to the best of our knowledge, there's no significant change.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representatives Gardner, Buch, and Ledoux, in that order.
Okay, thank you. Can you tell me if there was another way of making self-extinguishing cigarettes? Was there sort of a way that the companies at one time proposed changes to the tobacco itself I investigated this issue some time ago, and I think there was, and it changed the chemistry, and smokers found it less satisfying. And so the tobacco companies came up with this new way. Is that right?
That is correct. Representative Gardner, through the chair, there were a number of efforts in the past several decades to try and cut down on this fire propensity that is there, but the cigarettes were unpalatable to those people that were smoking it, and so because of that they were pulled off the market.
Thank you.
And I think in one particular case there was an increase in one of the lung malignancies that was out there as well.
Thank you.
Representative Boot.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm looking for, pardon my ignorance in this, but I'm looking for a method of enforcement. How is it that you're going to be able to ensure that these are the right kinds of cigarettes, and when does the date start for the mandatory sale?
Through the chair, Representative Book. The enforcement arm of this would be the Department of Revenue, since they regulate the sale of cigarettes in the state of Alaska. And I believe that there is a representative from the department online and available for questions should you have any specific ones. But the bill does outline that they would do that, as they do with the rest of the, for other reasons, with cigarettes now. And then... I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman, I forgot the second question.
Page 2, line 21.
Oh.
There's
the test methods.
The test method.
Yes.
If I could make a comment, Mr. Chairman, to answer Representative Bruce's question, there is a fiscal note that's out there that's going to be attended to, and that's where a lot of the enforcement is going to be coming from.
I'd like to make a statement at this time. Several members of this committee are co-sponsors of the companion bill in the House on this, mm-hmm. and it is my intent to move the bill today. And for that reason, we'll go to Gabrielle Du.
Couple of questions. Is there anybody opposing this bill?
Representative Ledoux, through the chair, there is nobody, to my understanding, that's opposing this bill. In fact, the manufacturers for the tobacco industry are also in favor of it.
Follow-up?
So I guess my question is, it's like I'm reading the sponsor statement, and it seems like bills have been enacted in New York, Massachusetts, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Why don't they just do it? Why don't they just do it without even... the law requiring them to do it? It would seem like it would be easier, since some states already require that you do it, to just do it, and just that would just be easier. Anybody have any idea why they don't?
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, I have no idea of the answer to that question. I believe there is a representative from the tobacco industry here, but I think it's like any other legislation. Most people don't do it until required.
Yeah, we'll get to him when we get to the room. Representative Newman and then Representative Booth.
Just looking under penalties and violations, so if a person purchases cigarettes off of the internet from another country or whatever the case may be, can they still do them for their own consumption or use, I guess would be, because you don't consume them.
Through the chair, Representative Newman, I think I would prefer to defer that question to the Department of Revenue. Johanna Bales is online, I believe, to answer any questions related to that, because they are the enforcement arm, and she could probably better address any questions you might have related to that.
And I guess the only concern I'd like to state first to Senator Olson is the fact that I think I'm a little bit cautious when I think about, you know, what the government tells you what you have to do, although I think it's right and I support the bill. But I think if somebody wanted to purchase those cigarettes somewhere outside, they're still paying state taxes on them as they come in. Whatever the case may be, kind of more of a freedom of choice there. I guess if they want to burn their house down, if they do that, that's their choice. But I'm just curious as to that, as if why you would want to presume if they have to sit by this, and we're going to make a citizen of the state of Alaska a criminal if they decided to do something else. So...
Is that a question or a statement?
I guess the question is would a citizen of the state of Alaska be considered a criminal under the penalties and violations on page 7 if they purchase cigarettes from outside the state of Alaska for their own personal use that were not self-extinguishing?
Through the chair, Representative Newman, I think that would also be a good question for the Department of Revenue.
Joanna Bales, are you still with us?
I am here. Can you hear me?
Yeah, welcome to Labor and Commerce. Did you hear the last question?
Yes, I believe I did, Mr. Chairman.
For the record,
my name is Joanna Bales. I'm the program manager for the state cigarette and tobacco products excise tax and enforcement programs. I believe the question was whether or not an individual would be subject to the penalties under this bill. Am I correct?
Yes.
Okay. And from reading this legislation, the answer would be no. They would not be subject to these penalties because those individuals would not be offering to sell or selling the cigarettes. That's the only time that the penalties under this bill apply. However, under the cigarette tax statutes, if you bring product in and aren't licensed with the Department of Revenue, I mean, we do have criminal penalties there, but those are already in place.
I guess one more question. Follow-up, Ms. Bales, Representative Newman. Then my question is, and kind of probably a yes or no question here, so I don't get confused my simple little brain here. If a citizen of the state of Alaska purchases cigarettes from outside the state that aren't marked, because they decide to use not self-extinguishing cigarettes, would they be a criminal?
Representative Newman, through the chair, under this statute, no, they would not.
Thank you, Matt, Mr. Chair.
Any further questions for Ms. Bales while we have her on the line? Thank you, Ms. Bales. Where are we at? Any further comments, or we'll take it to the people online?
Why don't we go ahead and go online? I think at this point, I just want to thank you for hearing this bill. I feel, a very important bill, and the sooner we can enact it, I think the more lives we can save and the less property damage will result.
Actually, I think I've cut off several of my committee members, Representative Book and then Representative Gardner.
No, my concern was that in answering Representative Ledoux's question, that somebody's already purchased and has an inventory of cigarettes. To answer your question directly, I don't think you can go in and it would be like retroactively making them get rid of something they already have on the shelf. So I appreciate the fact that you've given this a time period for an enactment. And my concern was also with Representative Newman. I know that online you can buy cigarettes cheaper from Switzerland than you can from the 7-Eleven store here. So, you know, does that make them a criminal if they do that? And that question was answered, so I appreciate that.
Representative Gardner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to offer a possible answer to Representative Ledoux's question about why haven't the manufacturers just gone ahead unilaterally and made this happen for all their product. And I think that from my previous research, I think some of the initial resistance from both the manufacturers and the consumers was that people don't always like their cigarettes going out. I mean, a lot of people, and I say this as a former smoker, sorry, a lot of people like to light a cigarette and just leave it there burning beside them. And if it goes out and it's reused, that's a consumer issue, but also they're going to sell less. If it goes out and you can start it up again when you want it, you're not starting a new cigarette and there's a sales question. But I imagine that at some point there's a threshold reached where it's no longer worth it for the manufacturers to offer two kinds. So.
Representative Ledoux.
You know, I've been listening to these questions about, well, is it going to make you a criminal simply if you have a cigarette in the state which doesn't meet these requirements? And I thought I heard that the answer was no, but then I'm reading the title of this bill, and the title doesn't doesn't seem to me totally consistent with the body of the bill, because the title says an act relating to the testing and packaging of cigarettes to be sold, offered for sale, or possessed in the state, and providing for an effective date. So I'm wondering why the verbiage in there, possessed in this state, when it doesn't seem to be the intent to preclude somebody who's decided to buy them from, you know, out of state to bring them into the state.
Senator Olson.
Can I answer? You want me to?
You want to go ahead?
Go ahead.
Okay. Through the chair, Representative Ledoux. I believe it has to do with the possession of them during the during that interim period from the time that you have the bill take effect until you're required to sell only cigarettes that are produced with this technology. I'm sorry, does that answer your question, Representative?
Well, I guess it answers it, but still, I mean, it does answer the question, but I guess I'm not totally certain whether one would need that in there just because it's going to have a delayed effective date.
Here's the way I interpret it, Representative Ledoux, through the chair, is that in order to go ahead and be in violation of this act, that you'd have to have on your in your possession cigarettes that are not qualified to go ahead and meet the mandate that has been put forth. You can still advertise to go ahead and sell cigarettes, so that and that's the critical thing. If you're selling cigarettes as opposed to just you have to possess them, and it includes possession and selling with the intent to sell.
Thank you.
Representative Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just briefly, I think that would have to be certainly the intent. If you have a lot of tour boats that come in here, people have a pack of cigarettes in their pocket that come from elsewhere, and you could, there's no way that you could do that otherwise.
Excellent example.
I think seeing no further questions, we're going to go to the people that are online. You can, do you have another commitment, Senator Olson?
Or no, I'll stay here.
Stay here. Ray Bizzle, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
Could
thank you.
Please state your name and affiliation for the record. And again, it's my intent to move the bill out this afternoon. So if you could possibly limit your comments to 3 minutes, we'll be able to move it out faster.
You got it. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Ray Bizzle. I'm the Western Regional Manager for the National Fire Protection Association. And I'm speaking in support of SB 84. I've been working on this issue for several years in different states, and during this time it's already been pointed out that 9 states have passed laws similar to the one that you're considering today. That means that over 1/4 of the U.S. population is now protected by this law. 4 states currently have legislation waiting to be signed by their governors: Iowa, Maryland, Montana, and New Jersey. And as it's been pointed out, this is already in effect in the nation of Canada. Most of the laws in these states have just become effective, and statistics really aren't available yet. But in New York, it has been in effect since 2004, and statistics are now available for the first 6 months of the effectiveness of this law. Studies in New York show that there has been no reduction in the cigarette tax revenue as a result of the law. Further, the New York Office of Fire Prevention reports a 1/3 reduction in cigarette-related fire fatalities and an even higher reduction in the number of cigarette-related fires. Alaska is not alone in considering legislation for self-extinguishing cigarettes. This year, 22 state legislatures introduced bills that are similar to SB 84. Consideration of this issue is widespread because it will make a difference. Nearly 1,000 people die each year in the U.S. needlessly because of fires started by cigarettes, injuring many more people and causing millions of dollars in property damage. Cigarettes that comply with the fire safety standard mandated by this bill actually reduce the likelihood of fire. Passing this bill will save lives in Alaska, reduce injuries, and reduce property damage. I thank you very much for consideration of this important issue.
Yeah, thank you very much, Ray.
Mm-hmm.
Next up, we'll go to Rusty Bellinger. Rusty, are you with us?
I sure am. Good afternoon, Chairman Olson and committee. My name is Rusty Belanger, Assistant State Fire Marshal for Alaska. Just so I'll make this real quick, the Division of Fire Prevention gives full support to Senate Bill 84, sponsored by Senator Olson, as it is before you today. This bill embodies the focus of the Division's mission statement, which is to prevent the loss of life and property from fire and explosion. This bill recognizes significant losses of life and property due to cigarettes. Between 1996 and 2005, Alaska lost upwards of $8 million in property to fires with cigarettes as an ignition source. And as of today, as mentioned earlier, this number continues to increase. In the same time period, cigarette fires caused 31% of deaths due to fire. This is the leading cause of fire fatalities in Alaska. It is our belief that this bill will significantly lower fire fatalities in Alaska related to cigarettes, as the manufacturers will have to meet new requirements for a cigarette that meets a fire safety standard. This would be a minimal cost to the state. This bill is a tool that we can provide to the citizens of Alaska without creating an impact on them. It is our duty as a state to help those that live within our borders. We urge your support on this bill, and I thank you for your time.
Yeah, thank you very much. Are there any questions for Mr. Bellinger? Thanks again, Rusty.
You bet.
Warren Cummings, Fairbanks, you with us?
Yes, I am. Thank you, Chair.
Welcome to Labor and Commerce. Please state your name and affiliation for the record.
It's Warren Cummings. I'm president of the Alaska Fire Chiefs Association and also the fire chief for the city of Fairbanks. The Alaska Fire Chiefs Association is very supportive of this bill. And the little facts that we'd like to present that their main goal to accomplish is reduction of deaths in Alaska from fire. Cigarettes are the leading cause of home fire fatalities in the United States, killing 700 to 900 people, smokers and non-smokers alike, per year. That's almost four per year in Alaska. In fact, in the last 10 years, we've had 37 people die in fires related to smoking materials. Smoking material structure fires killed 760 people and injured 1,520 others in the United States in 2003. In Alaska, we had five fatalities that year. One quarter of the victims of smoking material fire fatalities are not the smokers whose cigarettes start the fire. 34% are the children of the smokers. 24% are the neighbors and friends of the smokers. 14% are the spouses or partners. And 13% are the parents. NFPA research in the mid-1980s predicted that fire-safe cigarettes would eliminate 3 out of 4 cigarette fire deaths. If cigarette manufacturers had begun producing only fire-safe cigarettes then, an estimated 15,000 lives would have been saved in the United States. In Alaska, in the last 10 years, we've lost 37 lives. 27 of those lives would still be alive today if we'd had the self-extinguishing cigarettes 10 years ago. And with that, we encourage you to move the bill on and support it on the floor.
Well, thank you very much, Chief. Is there anybody else online that would care to testify? With that, we'll bring it back into the room, and with us in the room is Marie Darlin. And I hope ARP is supporting this bill.
AARP is. My name is Marie Darlin, and I am the coordinator of the Capital City Task Force in Juneau here. And Jim Carroll, who was first listed to testify, had another appointment, so he had to leave. So I am talking for him. But if Jim were here, he would be telling you some stories about his many, many years as a volunteer firefighter and chief of our Juneau Fire Department here. So he could have given you some actual descriptions and all, but he is very concerned about this, and really from the idea of the firefighters who put themselves in danger all the time too with these fires. And so it's a case of where we're looking at trying to prevent the deaths that are caused by this. And as has been mentioned, you know, within this past month, we had a perfect example of what happens. And you had four more families now who, you know, have no place to live. And it just becomes a factor that if there's something we can do about it, we should. And so for that reason, we do support the bill.
Are there any questions for Marie? Thanks again for joining us. It's always a pleasure. Anybody else in the room would like to testify? Seeing none, I'll bring it back to the committee. Committee comments?
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move.
Oh, go for it.
Okay with you? Yeah, I'd like to move House Bill. Let me just make sure I get this all exactly right. Sorry, Senate Bill. Number 84, it is 25-LS0596 version V with attached fiscal notes and individual recommendations, if any.
Seeing no opposition, it moves out of committee. Thank you for joining us, Senator Olson.
Thank you.
So, Chairman Denise.
Senator Olson is representing the whole committee.